Questions? People have any?
So thank you very much for linking to the causes and conditions, because that was one of my questions. And could you please say a little something about karma in relation to external events? I understand how we're talking about how we work with our inner reactivity, but things like unexpected meetings or that seem to just change the course of our lives, or something that seems to be a part of a pattern that never got even acknowledged, or unfortunate events, a car accident, fires, something that is part of our relationship to both others in terms of human relations and events that happen. Please.
Yes. Big questions, few answers, a lot of who knows, you know. Some of that falls in the realm of the workings of karma, cause and effect, are very complex. And, you know, maybe there's a reason and an explanation and an answer that somebody like the Buddha could give. But the normal human mind is, you know, doesn't see all of those aspects of all the different conditions from the past that come to fruition in any one moment of experience, whether it's a, you know, big world event or a, you know, a big personal event, an unexplainable something from left field, you know. Who knows? You know. You can sometimes make speculations or guesses. You can see trends, you know, that might lead to certain things happening. You know, like global warming. You know, you can see, yeah, there's an accumulation of events over the past how many ever decades of neglect. You know, of overuse of resources, et cetera, that lead to a certain set of events. Earthquakes, who knows? You know, it's part of being a human being, part of being on the planet. Mass murders, you know, very hard. The Buddha didn't really talk in very specific, detailed ways of, you know, these kinds of events, and whether they're from karma or what, you know. Basically, the teaching always kept on moving back to the individual experience, and the fact that there is a cumulative effect, you know, that even one small action or set of intentions in one human being can have rippling effects. You know, you can see that in, you know, just the Buddha, the example of the Buddha. He was one man, you know, one person. The impact of what he discovered and how he acted on that and taught, the effects were outstanding, incredible, and have lasted more than 2,500 years. And they're still going on. So, you know, a lot of it is just, it's kind of unknowable on a external global level.
Thank you. Would you say that there is a, that the, where we are being born, for instance.
Say that again, the what?
Where we are being born.
Location, yeah.
Location and maybe even circumstances, that could be a karmic thing, like a struggle, you know, where some get born here and someone get born and, you know, in the mountains in Afghanistan or, you know, or Syria, or is that is there a link to a karmic that could be explained? And then also into that figures, what's the question? I mean, some good and bad that's very clear was, you know, your actions and skillful, whether that it might be an opportunity, you know, where I would think, oh, I have great karma. I was born in Austria and I live in Marin County. And whereas maybe someone who's born, they have more challenges and maybe it's more opportunity to grow and to learn, or mm-hmm. it's really then that dualistic
mm-hmm. yeah,
comes
yeah.
in. But mainly was where you're born and that, if that could have any...
Yeah, to some extent, you know, karma is part of that process in that, you know, my understanding is that, you know, the rebirth process, when one dies, you know, one takes a certain level of tendencies and affinities with one, and based on those tendencies and affinities and maybe other uncontrollable circumstances, you know, one's consciousness would get moved towards seeking existence in, you know, in a similar kind of a situation. So whether it's with specific people or specific circumstances that one has an affinity or experience with, or an attachment to, or an aversion to, you know, both attachment and aversion creates strong, what we call karmic tendencies of attraction and affiliation, that will have some conditioning effect on where it is that we find our existence moving towards. You can see that happening in this very life too, you know, if you have a strong affinity or attraction to particular people or circumstances, then, you know, gradually, oftentimes, you'll find yourself moving into that kind of experience, that location, being with those people, being with those circumstances, being in that job, being, you know, in that country or whatever it is. And the same tendency of mind just keeps carrying on, whether it's through this lifetime or say into a next lifetime, so that the karmic tendencies will condition, you know, where one might find oneself in the next moment or the next lifetime. It's not necessarily so deterministic and linear that you can, you know, say, or that you have a huge amount of conscious control saying, okay, I'm about to die, I want to be reborn, you know, in California, in San Francisco, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, you can't, most of us, I don't think, would be able to, maybe the Dalai Lama, you know, sorry, but, you know, to have that level of control. But the tendencies would move us towards a certain location, realm of rebirth on a greater level, but affinity with certain circumstances. Usually what we're familiar with is what we find ourselves born into on an external level. I can't remember. There was a second part of that that I was going to say something about, and I can't remember. Anyway, that answers that first part anyway. Oh, right. Making lemonade out of lemons. yeah, and that you know, somebody who's born in, say, a more unfortunate life or circumstance, you know, to some extent probably is following the conditions that they set themselves up for by their affinities, by their associations, by their actions, you know, to some extent also, you know, that determines, you know, someone who's maybe born in less fortunate circumstances. But as we've been talking about all day, you know, there's always the opportunity to receive that vipaka, that result, with clarity, with equanimity, and not to suffer with it, not to reinforce it. You know, you might have to experience the difficulty of it, but we don't have to compound it and create the stage for you know, acute suffering with it in this moment and setting the stage for further experiences of the same kind in the future. We can stop that in, here in the present moment.
And thank you. A couple questions and or comment.
Yeah, if you can hold the microphone straight.
Okay.
Yeah,
there you better?
Go. Yeah, better.
Better.
Good.
The story about the salt in the river and the salt in the glass, it's kind of like that touched me kind of at the core. And I mostly live my life in the glass.
Join the club.
What?
Join the club.
Oh, yeah. But I aspire to the river.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling like I'm doing too well. It's kind of like, yeah, that's so I have some understanding when someone like you speaks to me or someone in life speaks to me, and I'll get that for a moment. But to stay awake and conscious about being in that place, I really have huge difficulty. Mm. I mean, enormous. So then when you speak about urgency, it's kind of, well, how do I live with my humanity and imperfection and still acknowledge the urgency, you know, of these many lives?
Without getting into anxiety about it all.
Yeah, okay, you've got it right there. So then, therefore, I live a lot of my life in fear.
Yeah.
That's exactly, that. What you're saying is exactly right.
Yeah.
Is that I live a lot of my life in fear.
Yes, your experience is a common one, you know, for people who are aspiring and struggling, you know, uh-huh. because all of us, we've all created a lot of karma.
Yes.
You know, we have deep grooves, deep habits, patterns and programs, is the way that Ajahn Suchito refers to it, that have been acted on for, you know, lifetimes, if you will.
Yes.
And, you know, we keep on walking down the same path over and over again. It just gets deeper and deeper and deeper. So you can't humanly, possibly, reasonably expect to just hop out of that groove and into another one, you know, mm-hmm. really quickly.
Well, sometimes I hop out of it, but I feel it's almost mystery. I'm not sure when that moment is.
Mm.
It often feels like gift. It often doesn't feel like intention. You're speaking of intention.
Right, and it is the results. And you don't, it's that kind of curiosity of not always knowing when the results of past intention are going to fruition.
Okay, you did say
that. The unpredictability of it.
Yeah. You did say that.
Yeah,
okay.
So like these moments of, you know, what the Christians might call grace, you know, come upon us, you know.
We don't know when the results, when the results will be.
We don't know when the results will be. And that's, you know, a lot of the practice is likened to, you know, just one drop at a time filling up the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Or Ajahn Chah's, I think it was Ajahn Chah's simile of like, well, you know, you're planting a garden and you prepare the soil and you get it just right and you add the fertilizer and you moisten it and then you plant the seed, right?
Okay.
And then the plant starts to grow.
Uh-huh.
And you see it and you see, oh, there's something happening here. And then you get like, you know, maybe a little greedy or anxious or impatient.
Yeah.
And you take a hold of that teeny little plant. You try and make it grow faster and you pull it up, right? And then you've just destroyed it.
Yeah. Nice image.
You have to just plant the seeds, prepare the soil, tend to it, take the weeds out, and then let nature take its course. And it will come to fruition. It will come to growth, maturity, in its own time, in its own nature. You can't force it. So knowing what to do, how to do it, how to tend the garden, how to create the skillful actions that will result in good fruits is what you tend to. But you as best you can, you try and let go of the expectation of how and when that's going to happen.
Yes.
And be content with
yes.
the process.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a bit of faith, you know. Yeah. This mm-hmm. is where some of these
yes.
things like faith come into being, you know, based on past experience. You've seen a little bit, you've seen it, you've experienced some of the results, you mm-hmm. reflect on them. So you have the faith that, okay, well, it's worked in the past. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how long it's going to take, what it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that I just need to keep doing it, because what's the option? The option yeah. is to stop doing it, and it all yeah. you know, starts to fall apart. So based on that sense of conviction, based on some sense and some experience of realizing that it works,
mm-hmm.
just keep on planting the seeds.
May I be greedy and ask one more personal question?
Okay.
I have the opportunity to do a 3-day solo retreat at the Buddhist Study Center in Barre, Massachusetts, where I will be visiting.
Yeah.
And I'm frightened about doing that alone. It's not a residential retreat. It would be just me, myself, and sitting and walking.
Yeah.
And so do you have any advice for me?
You've done retreats before?
Oh, yeah, several residential retreats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 3 days?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Okay.
Thank you.
John, could you talk a little bit about the effects of karma in situations where it's like, at best, you're choosing between the lesser of two evils? You may have good intention, you know, either way, but no matter what, somebody or something is going to get harmed, and how to skillfully deal with that as it arises.
Yeah. Not easy. Some of it's going to depend on the specifics of the situation, you know, and it's kind of hard to give a blanket answer, you know, because if, you know, it's a situation... You know, where you say, well, you're going to either kill this person or kill that person.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking of yeah. it more in terms of, you know, action will cause somebody to be harmed maybe, but inaction may cause, you know, harm to someone else. I mean, it may be,
yeah.
or it may be you have to cause harm in order to prevent harm or things like that, where no matter what you do,
right.
something, you know, whatever choice you make, somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah. Again, maybe no one answer, but depends on many things that are happening at the particular time that the decision is being made, whether it's for action or whether it's for inaction. And it's going to be really dependent on the circumstances. Like people would ask the Dalai Lama the question of, you know, like if you were in a situation with your mother and somebody was coming and they were going to kill her, and your only option was to either do nothing and let them kill her or take action and, you know, prevent that from happening, which would kill the other person, what would you do? And his basic answer was, I don't know. You know, I'd have to be in the circumstance, you know, to make that decision at that time. You know, making a conjecture about a possibility is tricky territory.
Sure.
But you know, having said that, you know, if you're in that moment, you just have to realize that, you know, you do whatever you can do to protect the intention of non-harming, of not taking unskillful action. The many factors that come to play at that particular time will determine what action or when inaction you take. The main thing is to realize that whatever action or inaction you do with intention is probably going to have some karmic effect. So if for whatever reason you feel like you have to choose to do something that would be considered unskillful because it prevents something more unskillful from happening or you from doing something that's more unskillful, then if you do that, you should do that with full clarity that there's going to be some consequence, you know, and to accept that, you know. I'm about to do this. I can't see any other way. or I'm about not to do this, I can't see any other way. I do it, I accept the consequences. You know, inaction generally, you know, has less of an effect than action, you know. But that's a very, you know, broad kind of a statement too, without being in that circumstance and being able to make that judgment. Just know that where there's intention, where there's action, there will be result.
I can't recall the context where Ajahn Pasana was responding to a question, and he talked about how difficult and the importance of intention in trying to sort out what might be the effects in the moment and linearly into the future. And when you speak of accepting the consequences, I hear you say, well, my takeaway is reflect and try to understand what your intention is and try to reflect on the skill. And I'm coming from a place where I'm sandwiched between unbearably unwholesome actions from someone that loved, from someone I'm related to, and the consequences which are equally unbearable to someone else I love. And I can't, I'm in the middle, and I can't, my clarity bounces all over the map depending on for whom I have empathy. Most violence, I heard your conversation with a young woman, most violence doesn't come from nowhere, right? I've not seen it come from nowhere. So I can tell I'm acting blindly, but one of these violent people will die very soon. And all I can figure to do is to go completely open and inquire and try to sit with whatever is going to come. And when you say inaction, then I wonder, maybe I need to just sit with my pain forever, because I don't know what will come of it. Therapists say you have to be prepared that nothing will come of it. So I wonder if you can, perhaps from personal experience or hearing the subjective experience of others, say more about inaction. I can't say what you, I can't even hardly taste what you're saying, but I could see that action might harm someone else. Inaction will be inside my own skin, the harm, I think.
Very difficult circumstances, because, you know, there's a lot of different factors that go into any of those kinds of situations that, you know, again, it's like trying to globalize an answer to some very specific circumstances.
Right.
So you can't say, well, one approach is better than the other, action is better than inaction, inaction is better than action, because it's just going to be, you know, different. And that's the process of skill, you know, of knowing, you know, the effects, or suspecting based on past experience what the effects of any one particular mm-hmm. action or inaction are going to result in. That's a matter of skill. You know, and the best you can really do is to try and keep those factors that are related to intention in mind. You know, so that the intention is to cause as little harm as possible. The skill may not be up to doing that in the best way. You know, you may not know the most skillful way to deal with a situation, even though your intention is one of non-harming. Because human life is complex and we don't all have the skills to do everything perfectly every time.
Thank you. In your words, I can taste what my inaction is actually: aversion and fear. Not addressing it seems easier than going forward.
Yeah, and sometimes just sitting with it, expressing it, talking it out, those underlying motivations come to consciousness.
He's senile, so whatever harm is going to happen may not last for very long.
Okay. Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm imagining that there are neutral karma events in our lives. Say, if I'm reorganizing the books on my bookshelf for an afternoon, not positive, not negative, not dark, not... And I understand, you know, to avoid dark karma events, you know, negative events. But I also see to a certain degree this sort of neutral karma may be a value to others. in a way that it may have its own. And sometimes trying to accumulate all this positive karma sounds exhausting. So I just wonder, I mean, is there sort of a neutral karma events which may lead to positive karma in a way?
It's a good question, you know, it's sort of like, you know, I think scholars debate over whether there really is any kind of neutral kind of experience, neutral feeling experience, you know. Is it all slightly positive or slightly negative, you know, something like that, you know. But, you know, that's kind of a debate for the scholars kind of a thing. But something that I was going to probably start talking about a little bit towards the end, after another meditation, was, you know, the fact that even the Buddha said in one of his teachings that, yeah, it's great to create positive karma, you know, to develop loving kindness, to develop restraint or renunciation or simplicity, if you will, to develop non-harmfulness, you know, compassion, those kinds of real positive qualities. Developing thoughts along those lines and mental intentions along those lines. And then he said, you know, I see no harm that could come from, in fact, even good that could come, you know, but no harm that could come from contemplating these kinds of things for a day. I see no harm that could come from contemplating these things for a night, for a day and a night, mm-hmm. contemplating thoughts of simplicity, loving kindness, non-harming. You know, good things can come from that. But even with that, even with developing, concentrating, contemplating those kinds of, developing those positive attributes, that kind of engagement and effort and intention can be tiring to the body when taken to of you know, very intensive kind of extent. When the body is tired, the mind is kind of confused or not settled. So with that in mind, I sit down, I let go, stop that, even those very skillful kinds of contemplations, and still the mind, you know, and start developing that peace, tranquility, based on very simple contemplation exercises of, you know, say, watching the breathing, whatever, to still the mind. Because when the body is quiet, when the mind is quiet, then concentration is able to develop. And the deepening of insight is able to happen. So I don't know if you want to call that neutral. It's more... stilling, relaxation, letting go of mental intensive activity, intentional activity, even of a skillful kind.
More of a balanced path of sorts.
Yeah. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't do the other one, but mm-hmm. that you take that in measure as well.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. Thanks.
So I recently went on a 10-day Vipassana retreat with Goenka. Goenka's in North Fork. And he often spoke about this idea of sankhara. Mm. And I don't know if I've clearly understood it, but from what I got, sankhara is something to do with, you know, when you're sitting and the sensations are coming up through the body, sometimes pain, not reacting with craving or aversion to whatever those sensations are, somehow purify your karma or purify, create purification. and release you of past maybe dark karma, or I don't know if I'm using the right terms, but I was wondering if you could just speak a little bit about that. And is that something that the Buddha taught and spoke about when he was teaching meditation?
Not having been there, I can't, you know, remark on exactly how it was that it was phrased or how you heard it. but can just offer a few thoughts that, first of all, the term sankhara is a very broad term in the Pali and can be used in many different ways. Could be that in that particular situation, he was referring to sankhara as volitional or intentional activity. Fabrication is another word that might be used, intentional fabrication, which could be what was being described as the reaction to a particular, say, painful sensation in the body, and that how you react to that painful sensation can be a determinant of your experience, just kind of in the same way that I was just talking about. So that it sounded like maybe the instruction was kind of sit through the pain and experience it and don't get into aversion, reaction, you know, that kind of mental proliferation, mental reaction to that particular pain, which, yeah, you know, in some cases of pain, if it's not really pain that's going to, you know, do damage to your knees in, you know, forever, you know, can be a useful way of stopping the reactivity to an unpleasant circumstance, kind of just being patient with something and sitting through it. It certainly will lessen the suffering in the present moment if there's not that added layer of aversion or reaction. There may still be the pain, but you're not adding the mental pain of aversion to it. That's how that kind of dealing with it in that present moment will affect your experience. You know, it's that whole thing of, you know, pain is inevitable or pain might be there, but suffering is optional. Whether it actually cleanses the past karma, you know, to me that's kind of maybe taking it a bit further than the Buddha would have intended. It's just my understanding. You know, that you know, purification in a sense comes in the way you hold it and the way you respond to it, and the life of the karma is going to play out according to its own causes and conditions. Certainly, by holding it in that way, you're not reinforcing it and you're not creating the conditions for future arising through aversion. You know, aversion is, you know, another form of engagement. You know, it's trying to get rid of something, but it's still, you're still engaging with the object, which compounds the karmic tendency in that particular experience. But you also have to, I mean, in that particular circumstance, you have to realize, you have to be wise, and, you know, sort of like a lot of people will take that kind of thing on and sit through excruciating pain no matter what, and then that itself becomes an aversive tendency. You know, so there's some delicate balance there. So cleansing, purifying, getting rid of the karma, in that way it almost sounds a bit like, you know, self-mortification, you know, which certainly isn't what the Buddha taught. But I don't know if that's exactly what was intended, you know, or maybe that was just the way you heard it. But it's not, yeah, self-mortification and inflicting pain or unnecessarily committing yourself to pain to work through or purify the karma isn't the way the Buddha taught. There were two more questions, and we're way over, but so what?
I don't really even know how to begin to ask this question, but no matter how much I meditate and how grateful I am, that everything that's happening in the world is affecting me like it's affecting a lot of other people in terms of the decimation of species and the difference in religion and killing for that and so forth. And I guess I'm just wondering, is there some tipping point where there's so much bad karma against people that have already created good karma in their lives are we ever going to see either the end of that or some kind of balance? Or are the people that are continuing to create bad karma just going to be reborn and continue the process? I mean, I don't even know really what the question is, other than just what we're seeing continues to just be more and more harmful as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, yeah. Humanity goes through cycles, you know. I think, you know, there are periods of time where goodness prevails, periods of time where darkness prevails. It's been going on and on and on like this. Great things, bad things, super wonderful, absolutely perfect, blissful things, unspeakable things, and everything in between. Yes, samsara. You know, cycles over and over again. It's the way the conditioned realm works. And the short answer is that the Buddhist teachings are, to some extent, that's what we've taken on, being in this conditioned realm. Realizing that should serve as a motivation for us to move off of that, you know, which we can do. He discovered that, you know, that is possible we're never even the most skillful, what they called wheel-turning monarch, you know, the most skillful leadership of the world with all the right motivations and all the goodness that can create vast, you know, experiences of goodness in the world. It's going to change, you know, as long as it's within the realm of conditions, because all things have their time based on causes and conditions. So for better, for worse, for in between, you know, just keeps going on and on.
Thank you.
Yeah. But there is an answer, you know, and that's experienced on an individual level. We do what we can to help other people, help others along the way. The best way we can do that is by knowing how to really move beyond all of it ourselves and then share that with others. Last question.
Just a question on the distinction between renunciation or the your terminology, letting go, versus denial. Is it a sequencing thing? So this idea of or suppression that you turn towards and then you turn away versus just turning away first, if that's making any sense. Does it make sense what I'm asking?
I am getting the gist, but maybe just give an example.
In the example that you were giving, when you have the intention of not doing harm, so you sit with the karmic tendency and you notice it's coming up, and then you choose not to accommodate the tendency.
Not to act on it.
Not to act on it. Where's the distinction between that, between sort of a, then you like throw it away, or Thich Nhat Hanh says throw it away, right? Uh-huh. What's that versus push away?
Uh-huh.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's like, I think maybe a simple distinction in common psychological parlance would be the distinction between suppression and repression. In that we can see a potential action that we take, a reaction that we take to something as possibly causing harm, like responding in the face of anger, responding with anger. You know, we can see that's going to cause, just it's going to perpetuate the whole cycle. So skillfully, consciously, we restrain ourselves. We suppress the urge to speak or to act because we know that it's not going to help. That's skillful suppression. Repression would be like on a less conscious level, tuning out, pretending not happening, denying that something is painful, is happening, and just kind of can't deal with it, close down, divert my attention, maybe seek some sort of gratification, relief from this nebulous pain that's coming from some outside circumstance and distract myself, or just push it down. And the problem with that is that it doesn't go away. You know, it's going to pop up in some other way, some other time. You're just saving it for later. And that would be kind of like that repression, denial, pushing down, pushing away, resisting based on aversion, which is different from conscious refraining, conscious restraint.